family? Are you talking about the whole community, or are you talking just about the campus as the family?
We're looking primarily at the campus as the family, but it's very, very difficult for you, I think, to separate some of those things out.
Right.
Obviously, the concept of community is broader than simply the college environment itself.
Right.
But in terms of the concept of transformational leadership, certainly what's happening on campus is a measure of the success that you're having. I mean, you could be doing a great job in the community, and the college could be falling apart at the seams, kind of thing.
If I get off on another tangent of that family, you'll bring me back.
I will certainly do that.
Great, good.
All right, are we ready to start?
You betcha.
You can hear me all right?
Yeah,
a little low.
A little low, but I think I can pick it up.
In your role as president of a community college, what is it that you do that focuses on the future direction of your college?
Oh, I think there's a... You just want me to talk now.
Right.
Okay. Just a series of things. First of all, you have to really know the local district or area that you're serving to really understand not only the demographics, but what the needs are and the interests. The only way you do that is really to get involved in the community so that you know that there are certain things that the college can do in terms of a leadership role in providing direction for the community and also to meet those specific needs that are out there. So there's an awareness of the local community. I think you have to be aware also of what some of the national trends are. Then it's a process of working with your faculty and your staff, setting priorities, making assignments, working on timetables, and then achieving whatever those goals might be.
Can you describe an incident in which you were required to direct and or redirect the focus of the college?
Yeah, the first one example is when I came in here, it was a very fine college, but in terms of graduation requirements and in terms of academic standards, there were no graduation standards at all. A person could take 62 hours of any course he or she wanted and get an associate degree. So one of the things that we did is we took our time. It's a process that we had to go through, working with a faculty and staff committee in trying to come up with a list of graduation requirements that we thought were good for our institution and would be good for the student. I think the key to it is that most of us that are experienced administrators probably could sit down alone and put together a list of graduation requirements that people would have to meet to get an associate degree. But the importance was the process, the involvement of the faculty and the staff and the debates of whether this course should be required or another course, and then reaching some consensus that really allowed a kind of a buy-in, if you would, from the faculty. And this is the direction we want to go, and these are the standards we're going to live with. And it probably took us about a year and a half, and some real nice discussions, debates. And when it was all done, did we come up with anything that was unique compared to other community colleges our size? The answer was no. But the process was important because they felt and truly they were involved in setting those standards.
That's great. Very good example. And at the same time, I'm sure many of the faculty within the organization were happy to see that direction.
Oh, yes. Very much so. We probably had a minority, and I'm making up this percentage, probably 20% of them that had some concern and said, no, you know, it's best just to let the student take the course he or she wants. But the vast majority of them felt that this was the direction the college needed to go, and this is what we needed to accomplish. But they wanted to be involved in that process. They didn't want it just to come out in the catalog. And I think that process, even though it took a long time, really brought the faculty together. And again, that's something I worked on probably started 3 months after I arrived on the scene.
Oh, that's great. That's a very good example, too. Let me shift gears slightly to the second question.
Yeah.
How would you explain or characterize your particular style of leadership? I think that's almost, in a sense, where you were going.
Yeah, I'm open, participatory, you know, the standard words that you hear from a lot of people. The one thing, though, that I make sure is that the individuals that are charged, whether it be a committee or a group of individuals that are given a charge to do something, I want them to make sure what their role is, what I expect of them. Sometimes I think presidents err in that they don't set the ground rules, and the committee works on a project thinking that they will make the final decision. Then when they're done with their work and they submit that report and recommendation to the president, they get very upset if the president doesn't agree with them and does something else. And I make it very clear that I am the one that's going to make the final decision. And I will be the one, if need be, to make that recommendation to the Board of Trustees. And by doing that, they know up front, if they feel uncomfortable with that, I don't tell them after they've spent a year working on a project. If they feel uncomfortable, then they can tell me no, they don't want to be involved. And I've never had that happen. And rarely do I not agree with that recommendation. But again, it's open discussion. But when it comes down to making the final decision, everybody knows it's going to be my decision to make.
Can you tell me about a particular situation which demonstrates your leadership style? What happened and what was the outcome?
Well, let me give an example. Since I talked about a curriculum matter, let me talk about a personnel matter. Again, early on when I got here, I had to hire an academic vice president. Very important. I wanted all the input I could possibly get from the faculty and from a student committee. I sat down with them. We worked on a job description together. We again reached consensus on what we were looking for. By the way, we didn't have a vice president's position. That's why we had to go with the job description. Then I told them that what I wanted from them is to come up with a list of five people that I would interview, and since that person was going to report to me and I was going to hire that person, I would make that decision. But I wanted their feedback, and I also told them up front if I wasn't happy with the five, I might reopen the search, and we would do it again. And so it worked out fine, and as it turned out, we did reopen the search. We didn't get our vice president until the second go-around, and we got a good one, an excellent one. It took us a little longer than we wanted, but the committee felt good about the process. The faculty members walk the halls, and they talk to each other, and the word was out there that they really thought everything was done above board. They had input, and that I wasn't just going through the process, and they didn't feel like I knew somebody ahead of time, and I was just putting them through the steps. So that's an example.
That's very, very good. Excellent example. Again, shifting gears. How would you describe your relationships with students and staff in your institution?
It's excellent. I know that sounds egotistical as hell. I think the relationship I have with the faculty and staff is good. The rapport that we have is excellent. One of the comments that we constantly get when people come to visit our campus or North Central teams or other state accrediting teams is a very positive feedback on how people feel about the institution and how they feel about me. So I think I have a good, healthy relationship. To say that all 540 full-time people love me and send me birthday cards would be an overstatement. I'm sure there are some people that have some concerns, but overall I think I have the support of the faculty and staff.
Do you have much involvement with students?
Yeah, I'm a student service person. I'd spent 10 years in that area. I meet with the president of the student government on a regular basis. I meet with the student senate on occasion. Sometimes they invite, sometimes I ask to be invited. I meet with the editor of the newspaper. And so the answer is yes. Probably not as much as I would like, but those 10 years in student services were good years, and I try to keep up with what students are interested in and what their concerns might be.
Can you discuss a particular incident or situation which describes your orientation or relationship with students, faculty, administrators, or board members?
Oh, well, that's a general question. We're talking about students. Let me just talk about the students. One of the things that we're considering now is building a rather large and a very expensive parking garage because we're growing so rapidly. Well, in order to pay for that parking garage, we're going to have to assess a fee to students and also charge for parking. Well, before I took that recommendation to the board, I wanted to find out what students felt about that. So I had a series of coffee and conversations, little meetings that we advertised and promoted in each of our 9 buildings so that students could come in. They knew what I was the issue was, and they could give me some feedback on whether they thought it was a good or a bad idea, and give me any other suggestion on how we can solve a rather severe parking problem that we have on campus. And we took that information and summarized it. And when we went to our board with our first recommendation, not only did I share that with the board, but I made sure I had some of the students' leaders there to express their feelings to the board before the board made the final decision.
What happened with that, Chuck?
We're in the second, in fact, on April, I think it's April the 4th, we have our facilities, our final facilities master plan, where the board will decide whether or not they're going to go that route. It looks like they will, to be truthful, but we won't know until April.
Very good. Again, moving on to a different theme. How do you, as a college president, motivate those around you?
Oh, you know, I think the way you motivate people is to create an atmosphere within the institution that's very positive and healthy, that the college is good, serving the needs of the community and the students, has an excellent reputation locally, statewide, and nationally. And I think by instilling that sense of pride, what you do is you motivate people. That motivates people. I don't. That motivates people. To the point where they don't want to let the institution down. If they're in charge of a department, they want their department to be as good as the institution. And so the motivation comes from within rather than somebody with a whip saying, you know, you have to do this and that. And that's the, you know, we talk about excellence. We talk about what we're achieving. We do a lot of positive things with our faculty and staff. If they have honors or recognition, we make sure people know what they've accomplished. And there's just a sense of pride that I think starts with the custodian and goes through the president, that this is our institution, it's a fine institution, and my God, I'm not going to let the institution down because my department or my program is going to be the very best in the country, and I'm going to work very hard to achieve that. So that's, I think that's how we motivate people.
Can you tell me about a particular incident in which you needed to inspire others?
Well, I can give you, it's good old University of Texas study that came out 3-4 years ago. I can't remember. They listed the 5 top community colleges. Well, I talked to Roosh and some of the other people that were on the panel, and we knew that we weren't in the top 5, but we knew that our college was ranked up there high. In fact, I think it was John that told me that we were probably within the top 10. Well, I used that information at a breakfast, orientation back-to-school breakfast about 4 years ago. And I told them that we were not in the top five, but we were rated as one of the better community colleges, and that our goal was that one of these days we wanted to be the number one community college in the country. And then I told them how we were going to achieve that. By the way, before I did that, I talked to our board of trustees because I wanted to make sure they wanted to roll in the same direction that I wanted to roll. And they said, go for it. And by doing that, it was an interesting feedback that I got. First of all, it was motivational, and people felt very good about it. But I had a bunch of faculty members that came down, and these are good people. And they said, Chuck, you know, it's not important, you know, if we're in the top 10 or the top 5. What is important, and then they talked very philosophical, you know, what is important is how the student learns and if they achieve and if they are successful. And I told them I agreed with that, but part of my job was to motivate and to market the institution. And if I could instill a feeling of being, you know, a good institution, but one that could improve, that I was going to do that, and I was going to tell people how good we were and how people felt about us, but we wanted to be better. And it worked. It really worked. Now people are taking a great deal of pride about the institution. And that happened in just a short, was that 4 years ago or 3 years ago?
Yeah, 3 years ago,
three
probably.
3 years ago.
Yeah. Well, that's an excellent example.
And it really did work. In fact, some of the faculty members that came to see me right after that breakfast are now the ones that are as proud as anybody else, and they're saying the same thing I said 3 years ago. So it worked, and it also worked. You just don't deal with the faculty. I make it a point to talk with our maintenance crew, our custodial crew, our secretaries. I come back at night and meet with our night crew, our adjunct, our part-time faculty, so that you have. You know, if I count adjunct, we have 1,000 people there that are hopefully feeling good about the institution, and they're going out and they're really being our marketing people. They're telling their neighbors and their friends about how proud they are of working at this institution.
That's terrific. I really, I think that's an approach that sometimes we slip up on in terms of the role of the others than the faculty in the organization.
Oh, very important. I'll tell you. It's not part of your question. A good example of this is we just successfully, again, this has been about the 6 straight years, fought off a legislative bill to put us under the Board of Regents to take away local control of our community college. The group that sent the most letters to their legislators was the maintenance, custodian, and secretarial group, not the faculty. Now, the faculty did an excellent job. But I guess my point is, you know, these people know some of these legislators, and they wrote personal letters, and it worked.
Isn't that great? Yeah, that's just terrific. You know, as you're telling this story, and I'm not sure you can hear me very well, but one of the stories that was shared with me earlier was the president going and meeting with the custodial staff that worked the graveyard shift.
Uh-huh.
And he asked, what are some of the concerns? And his point was, they see me as somebody that cares and that things happen. And they said, well, you know, we find it really lonely. We each have our assignments at night and we're in this building all by ourselves. And it's really lonely.
That's right.
And he said, well, is there something that could be done about that? And they said, well, yes, we could team it. We could share the responsibilities and take on a larger area and have more than one person working. And that way we've got a little companionship and it's not as lonely. And so they did it immediately.
That's great.
The custodial staff thought, wow, this is terrific. He cares. They felt good about the fact that they had a suggestion that was listened to. And, you know, it's as simple as that, and yet what a dynamic impact that had on everyone in the organization.
You know, one of the things that we started, and it came out of a staff development committee, a beautiful idea, is we have we call it an extra effort, thanks for your extra effort, coffee cup. And it's a nice little coffee. It didn't cost us a lot of money. But for those people that are nominated, it's not automatic, by their supervisor or by somebody else for doing something kind of ab- above and beyond what their job calls for. A committee about four times a year takes a look at these nominations, if you would. And then they narrow it down to about six or eight times, again, about four times a year, that come into my office. And this is from the custodian all the way, it could be to a dean. And I have a chance with the eight people in my office to thank them for what they did. And because the other seven people don't know, so I tell the people what this particular person did and how it benefited the college and how thankful I am. And all we give them is this little coffee cup that says, thank you for your extra effort. And then it's signed and all that. It probably cost us $5. I don't know what it cost. I'm here to tell you, I had people with tears in their eyes. I mean, the president gave me a coffee cup. And I've talked to some of the wives that tell me that the coffee cup, it's like a trophy. They put it above the fireplace. And so it's just a little thing that, again, can instill some pride and spirit. And also they feel good that I've taken some time to thank them for their extra effort. It's been an excellent program. We've had it for 2 years now.
Oh, that's terrific. And as you say, it's not the cost, it's the recognition.
It's just that you take time and recognize them. That's the main thing.
That's great. Let me move on now to the fifth question. And that is, how do your personal values impact your position as the college president?
Oh, very much. I think that people have to perceive you as being a person that's honest. I'm going to use again the words that you a man of integrity, somebody that they can trust. I think if your behavior is different or perceived to be different when you're away from the job than it is when you're on the job, I think it's very difficult for a president to survive for a long time. So I think your own value system that you have has to be a constant, if you would. It has to be the value system that you have on campus and off campus, at work or if you're at home. So I think it's very important. Now, how do you get that across? I really think you try to be what you are. You don't try to do anything that's phony. You don't try to pretend that you're something you're not. And I think in the long run, not right away, but if you're at an institution long enough, people pick that up. And so you don't go about trying to say, boy, I'm going to show them what my value is. I think they pick up what your values are just by watching you on a day-to-day basis.
That's terrific. That's exactly right, I think. Can you tell me about an incident in which your values were challenged?
Oh, boy. Yes, I can. Sure. It's a board CEO relationship. I had a board member that came in with an agenda. His own agenda. He was elected. It's going to sound crazy, but he wanted to bring football to the campus. The college board, before I got here, had studied that question for a long time and decided they didn't want it. So he came to the board, and we went through a very open process. In fact, he turned out to be one of my biggest supporters, even though we didn't start football. But there were times when he would meet with me and try to cut a deal. If I would recommend football, he would recommend something else and what have you. And I just told him that I couldn't do that. That's not right. That I would give, I would look at football very objectively. We would do a study. We would have discussion. And then the board would decide, but I needed him to know up front that I was not coming into this objectively because I had dealt with that question in another state and that I wasn't convinced that's what we needed. So my values, he tested my values, but by not changing, I'm here to tell you, he was my biggest supporter, and now he's no longer on the board. He's a personal friend.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
That's great.
By the way, this guy was a former All-American in college and a pro football player.
Well, and you can say, so you can understand his motivation
to
some
right.
extent.
And he was that way. His agenda item is crazy as hell. He told the people that one of his agendas, this is when he was running for election, was to bring football, and they elected him. I don't know what that says about agenda items and that, but at least he didn't try to hide that. He was very honest up front, and I appreciated that also.
That's great. I have one final question that I want to ask you, which is kind of a blue sky question.
Okay.
If you could change education in any way, what would it be? How might you accomplish what it is that you would like to change?
Well, I think we're in the process, and I'll speak for our institution, but I'll generalize, and I think education in general is changing. It's not there yet. I think we in education have been, over the years, have been resistant to cooperation. We've kind of done our own thing. This business and industry thing that's come up really is relatively new. It's within the last, I'm going to say, 10 years. I think what education has to continue to do in terms of change is to be more cooperative in working with entities within the district that they serve, with business and industry, with county government, with school systems. I think they need to share faculty and facilities and equipment and really come up with creative ways in which they can accomplish things without just continually building another building or buying more equipment and duplicating a lot of stuff that's being done in the unit. I think we need to do a better job at that, and I think probably the pure economics is forcing us to do it. We're not necessarily proactive in this. A lot of schools are reacting because they figure that's the only way they're going to be able to do anything is through cooperation. So I think that's one of the things that we have to do. And then a big kick that I'm on now is that with the emphasis on the elderly, I really think colleges are going to be challenged in the 90s to really look at how we're going to provide service to those people that are retired. I don't want to call them, old people, because medicine, we know this, people are living longer and longer and longer, but what I'm finding out is their minds are sharper and sharper and sharper, and what we're going to have at our college in the 90s are literally thousands of healthy, physically and mentally, people in the 60-up age bracket that are going to demand certain things in services and in programs and curriculums, and if we're not ready to meet that need, I'll tell you, they're going to make the 60s look like it was kindergarten. Because these are people that are going to have money, they're going to have experience, they're going to have energy, and so I just put together a presidential task force to address this issue, so that we are prepared, and we have lots of senior citizens on campus now, but I think we're just seeing the beginning of that. I think community colleges are going to be loaded with senior citizens that are going to be just really a challenge and excitement. So I see that as one of the big movements that we need to do here at our college.
That's terrific. That's absolutely terrific. I'm just going to shut the tape recorder off right now unless you have any final comments that you want to make.
Uh-huh.